So, thanks to everyone joining our panel exploring what it means to be a outdoor partner. And I'll start off on the convener. This panel also is on the best person to sit on the convener. Talking about a member from the University of Virginia with technologies in the library, among other things. We introduce my panelists. We have Eric Bakey, as a senior DevOps engineer for Stanford University Libraries. We have Julie Allison, the Technology Development Manager for Collection Services Library and Archives at the University of York. We have Michael Frisha, Manager of Digital Library Programming at Yale University Library. We have Julian Hardesty, Metadata Analyst for Indiana University Library. And Hector Correa, Senior Software Engineer at Brown University Library. Did I get that right? So I wanted to do a little background to frame the discussion. You know, the hybrid community is people all around the campus. And essentially that core purpose is all of us working together to manage digital assets. And whatever that means, you know, all aspects. Contributions could include participation in calls, events, communications, whether it's contributing to websites, webinars, presentations, problem solving, strategizing, developing software, managing projects, managing services, training, community building, fundraising, and many other ways that probably each of you contribute every day to this community. So, what is the value that we get from this community? And I'd say that's as God-ranging as it is the contributions. Is it the solutions? Is it the community itself? Is it our relationships with each other? Is it the training? Our panelists, I invited because of the different roles that they serve and represent, the different sides of their institutions, the different place they are in the process of partnership, the different shores that they may come from, and their different perspectives. And I'm going to ask each of the panelists to start out this discussion with all of you on, from each of your roles and perspectives, how do you or have you contributed to the community? And secondly, what do you value about the community? And I'm going to ask Erin to start us off.
Sure. I think the most direct way that I participate in the community is via the Hydrox team.
Yes.
That feels pretty directly related to Hydra. Also within conferences and things, I try to identify other DevOps like-minded people, whether they're sort of standards and coding standards or testing operations concerns. Try to build the community around those sorts of shared responsibilities that we all have. Second part of the question.
Is the value you get from the community?
Value I get, yeah. I don't know how to solve every problem that we come across. And it's through outsourcing conversations that we are able to collectively figure out we have pretty sophisticated problems, whether it be performance, or at least sort of things that I'm concerned with, performance in our application stack, how to be able to solve problems like what sort of service level agreements we have for the service itself, what sort of things are, you know, larger than just one institution as far as data preservation and things of the like. So, feels the community itself gets, you know, the great minds together, and we'll try to solve these things as we come, and hopefully iterate through those things to get better and better at our jobs.
So in terms of what we contribute, we're new Hydra partners, probably the newest on this table. So we're not, and we're new to Hydra in general, so we're not really in a position to contribute code very much because we're still learning. So what we're trying to do is contribute sort of in kind, so saying yes to panels is a good example, but trying to get involved in the community, offer it. I offered to co-organize the Virtual Connect, taking up any opportunity just to meet people and contribute and join panels and do posters and do presentations. I feel a particular responsibility to contribute on behalf of the UK institutions, because we're a much smaller band of institutions than obviously in the US, and we can't always come to all the events because we can't send the volume of people to Hydro Connect that the US institutions can. So I think it's important not only for York but also for other UK institutions that I come here and absorb knowledge and pass it back to people. In terms of what we value, up until 2 years ago we had our own, what we still do, our own Fedora interface, Java JSP, locally built. And I wrote a case to our senior management to say, this is a bit silly really, because we're trying to solve on our own issues that the Hydro community have already solved. So that, for me, that's the big thing. We're a small institution with only a small development resource. We cannot build everything our institution needs on our own. Hydro has solved probably 80% of the things we want, and that's really what, so in terms of the technology, that's what I value. But in terms of the community, I think it's just a fabulous community. You can send really basic newbie questions to the list, and people are really nice, and no one says you should know that. People try and help you. People are willing to talk to you. People find you if you've got common interests. And I think I've been surprised by how good the community is. That was part of my argument for becoming Hydro partners, for adopting Hydro, and being pleasantly surprised by how good this community is.
So from my perspective, I would say our contribution, let me see. So we started with Hydro about 3 years ago, and I went in with a team of 5 developers at the time who had a lot of experience developing on the Fedora platform. So we're one of the partners that has not really contributed any code to Hydro itself, but instead we've contributed greatly to Fedora 4. And so that's where we put a lot of our emphasis. And we've relied a lot on the community to produce a lot of code that we've consumed. We would like to make a change to that, but we see Hydro in a box as being a great platform for EL to finally be able to start contributing to that platform. But I think a lot of it goes into the training that we received from the community. In some respects, we felt that we aren't really good Ruby programmers, so we've been hesitant to contribute to Ruby code bases. We kind of see it as what we've done is good enough for us to look at, but we're kind of scared to let the world look at the Ruby code that we've done. So I would have to say that the value that we see in being a Hydro partner is really the Hydro community itself. This past spring, we started talking more about how our upgrade path from Fedora 3 to Fedora 4 is going to go, and RDF being one of the big problems that we need to solve. And so we put a call out to the Hydro community for participation and some phone calls to help us kind of talk through our concerns. And I kind of think without the Hydro community, we would have difficulty getting as much participation as we did. We ended up with 4 hours of recordings, and we still replay them because they reinforce some answers that we weren't really sure if we were answering the question correctly. And I think those calls really helped confirm it, but also brought out some really interesting things that we hadn't even considered from the partners that had already gone through the same kind of question and answer process we did. So I would say that we value the community very highly, and we try to participate as much as we can, whether it's planning or hosting regional events or even just some. This past summer, we did an event specific to Spotlight, and when we did that, the event was really to help senior management at Yale understand what Spotlight was. But we very quickly decided to turn it into how many other people can come to this event. Why does it have to be just 6 managers in a room with the programmers from Stanford selling Spotlight? Why not bring everybody from the community together? So
I'm Julie Hardesty from Indiana University, and Indiana's been a Hydro partner since September 2012, so they've been a partner for a few years, and I actually can't even really speak to all the ways that Indiana's been involved. I can talk about mostly about what I know from what I've been doing. So I've been working on, as a metadata person, I've been working on Avalon Media System And I've been working also more recently on HydroDam 2 preservation system that we're trying to develop with WGBH. So I've been kind of involved in Hydro myself in a lot of ways, focusing on time-based media. But I also, I did early on when I first came into this position, was my entry into working on Hydro things at IU. And I actually started off jumping into a community sprint early on, one of the Sophia community sprints. It was a while ago though. And trying to remember exactly what I was doing, because I wasn't doing any development work, but I was trying to help with metadata issues that were arising in whatever the sprint was that they were working on. And then since then, I've become pretty heavily involved in the metadata interest group, the Hydro metadata interest group, and several of the working groups that are part of that. I think the thing that I value most about the community is just all of the resources that are there for learning. There's people, but there's also a lot of documentation. There's a lot of information that's been put together since the Hydro project started. And it's been really good to help me figure out things like how Fedora 4 works. Just going into Hydro projects and trying to work through what's happening and how Fedora, what sorts of things Fedora 4 is doing. But even beyond specific technologies that Hydro project is using, it's actually been a really good resource to learn out how RDF works, how triple stores work, how linked data works, like what all that means. So the Hydro context has really helped me get a handle on what it means to try to work in those contexts. Those are some big things. I've also learned a lot about Slack and Waffle. although I have not learned about Giphy. I can't figure that one out yet. Working on that. So, that's.
Hi, my name is Hector Correa. My contribution to the Hydro community has been like in two ways. For 2 years, I worked at Penn State, and Penn State has been a partner and continued the code. So for 2 years, I worked on Sophia 6, which was the one that moved from Fedora 3 to Fedora 4. Then I was working on Sophia 7, that is working with PCDM. So my contribution for those 2 years was mostly on code, a few presentations here and there, white papers for the community. Now that I'm at Brown, we're not a partner of Hydra, but we still value the community a lot. And it's probably, if you look at the Project Hydra website, it's community, architecture patterns, and tools. And to all of those, I mean, we're not using the tools per se, we're not using a Hydra head. We're using Fedora, we're using Black Light, we're using Solar. We're using the patterns in our repository to build our solutions. It's built in Python, but we still use a lot of the knowledge of the Hydra community. I'm not working on it right now in repositories, and I still want to come to this conference to see everybody and talk with people. There's a lot to learn from the community. Talking with people that are in the same domain, especially for somebody like me that doesn't have a library degree, and talking with really smart developers, really smart librarians in the same room, it amplifies the amount of knowledge that you get in 2-3 days. And that happens also in HydroTech, Slack channel, so on and so forth. So, for me, has been the community and the patterns, and of course, tools when I was actually working on them.
So, I want to open it up to the room and ask all of you, like, what kinds of questions do you have for this panel, and are there things that you would like to share with the room about ways that you contribute, things that you value, or also, like, what kind of problems are cropping up? Like, what are the blockers? What do you think that we could work together to solve to enhance, like, both what we value and the ways we can contribute? I think it's a small enough room, we don't need microphones. And I ask my panelists.
One thing that we've run into, so from Dartmouth, we are not a Hydro partner, but we've been sort of working towards it for a while and working on the technology side of it internally. But I know that our admin posts have gotten hung up on somewhere there is a sheet that says you must do A, B, and C to be officially recognized as a Hydro partner. And so things like you must, or you should contribute code is to have a back to the community. That has been a sticking point for them, not the fact that we need to do it, but the fact that we've been so focused on tooling ourselves up that we haven't gotten to the point where we really have much code that is of value outside of our own systems. I don't know if that's something that really could or even should be addressed, but I can say that's one of the things that's blocking us.
Well, I think that raises for me that we need to be clearer about it, because I don't think that's a requirement. But because that's what's being interpreted, that seems to me to be a place that we can look and make that information clearer so that barrier is relieved for prospective partners.
Yeah, I'm not even sure this is something that somebody administratively found on, I was looking somewhere, but I don't know what specifically prompted that thought.
It's interesting that you say in the wiki somewhere. Yeah. That's
We develop information system, but our search is not that great.
Yeah.
But if I could add to what you were saying, the fact that you might feel shy about posting some of your code or contributing it back to the community, once you get past the legal that you need the CLA and all of that, I think it's a natural, you see all of the good stuff that is happening, and it's kind of natural to think, whoa, we're not nearly as good as Justin or Jeremy. I mean, it's pretty intimidating. These people are like uber smart, and they will actually rethink your PR. It's painful the first time, but you learn a lot, you grow a lot, and you push code that will be much better than the one that you started with, so it's really a good way to learn. It's a bit humbling. There's no doubt about that, especially if you are not a Rails developer, that you haven't been a Rails developer for many years. That was my case. Learning Rails on top of something that is not what Rails tends to do is a bit harder.
Yeah.
So it is common. I would suggest if your solution is open source, present it in forum like this one, present it in code for you, present it as much as you can, but people start seeing what you guys are doing. And people might say, we want that. They don't even know what you have right now, so you may have a lot of things that we need. Just presenting the people will say, we want that, and we get it. And you can also start pushing, hey, we would like to continue this back. It takes time. It is painful. It's not because you're doing something wrong. It is really a slow process. I think we should change that a little bit, but it is what it is right now.
I'd also say that Hydra isn't just code, right? And it's a fairly sophisticated architecture. And that there's a whole amount of information that you gain just by trying to install it on various machines. Just to try to install it on one machine, you gain a lot of expertise that other people think is a real barrier even to get it running on a machine. Right? And I would say if we have it written somewhere that a Hydra partner means you must contribute code, I personally would object to that. You know, my code experience is much smaller as far as the actual software stack. I think we should try to redefine it as not just ones and zeros, not just the software itself, but also the whole ecosystem that Hydra tries to represent.
What Hector was saying is pushing those into the hyperspace. There's a lot of this is neat, and then will be shepherded into a better state, and it'll be a conversation with developers, and it helps grow. Like, oh, this is why this concession was made that you might have in code. And I think Justin is particularly mindful of how to move from here's this, which you may be like, to something that you're both like, hey, we really worked on that to get it to a good state. So it can be intimidating, but like coming face to face and seeing developers in particular, Justin is a helpful thing to understand. Really wants to get stuff done and build.
I think from our perspective, right. Interesting to hear people say we're worried about the quality of our code, because that's exactly what we're in a position. But for me, becoming a partner, it's that impetus to get involved. We can't just sit back and watch the list. And it means we, at the moment, doesn't have to be code, but just getting involved in working groups and panels, and it's a more formalized commitment to the community than just being on lists, and that's one of the things that was important to me. And that's also important to get senior backing at my institution. We had to have someone senior write a letter to say we're committed to this. There's a lot of value just in having them recognize that to an external body and not just internally. So I think there's, I think being a partner is very valuable.
I think if I heard it, Holly was one of the fundamentals of our practice, and we were there from day one, by the truth. And I don't think, I'm pretty bad to be correct, but I don't think Holly has ever chosen a coach. We have so many coaches as well. But I'm not sure we contribute back to the coach. If we have it, it's not been in a significant work. But I would like to think we have put an awful lot into the community side. So this idea of going to the prerequisites is definitely not really what I said in that conversation. We need to work out some better.
A few weeks ago, my UI UX designer developer came and said, every time we do a Sophia upgrade, I have to go back and put all my accessibility stuff back in there. This is like, and I said, maybe you should contribute back to Sophia so you don't have to do that.
Yeah.
He really wanted to be here. He could make this meeting because he had a test. He's doing an online master's program for Georgia Tech, but he was really excited about being included in the community. It's just, you know, it never occurred to him that it could roll something back in and benefit the whole community. So he's probably a little intimidated about doing that too, but he's going to get an opportunity.
And one question of what it seems like, you know, the intimidation about kind of unraveling or unveiling this code, this kind of secret and maybe terrible code, maybe terrible in the eyes of the person that wrote it. I'm really interested to find out how can we be a bit more encouraging for whatever it is that you have. It's fine. It might get some scrutiny as far as if it's a feature that could get folded into the rest of the stack, or maybe it's an opportunity to say, you know, here's some style guide advice around how to make it a little bit more readable, or maybe there's a pairing moment that could happen there. I just wonder, as a community, how we could make that a little bit less of an intimidation wall and a barrier to really participating in that. I think that feels a very DevOps concern to me, so I guess what I'm saying is, think about that, and if you have some ideas, let's talk.
And something else to consider is coming to these events and meeting the people that are going to be reviewing your PR make a big difference. If you only get a comment and you don't know the person, sometimes it's hard to interpret
the
you meet them here and you talk to them in the hall, you actually probably do the PR in front of them here and just pass them on the hall. People will come and actually they will go to code with you. And you get a much better experience than you just only to Slack or only through email and you get to know the person.
We tried out a new thing this year with the virtual Hydra Connect. How many people in this room were able to participate in that? Is it some number? You know, we used to do a partners meeting every quarter. And obviously, once we started growing, that was just like impossible. Like, you know, everybody could come, it was too expensive. You know, we also had people working on different solutions together that needed time. So this meeting derived out of like, we need connect time, we need everybody to connect. And Matt said, who I think is in the room.
Yeah.
Matt was like, why don't we have a connect where everybody connects and shares what they're doing? But I would say, you know, this meeting once a year, you know, how valuable is this? And, you know, would it be valuable to have more FaceTime? You know, it's something to consider, like how would we go about that? Would it be valuable to people? Like outside of this connect, maybe for the very things that Hector was saying, because I think FaceTime, like meeting people, sort of drops that intimidation barrier. It's like, if I'm just dealing with somebody through email, or online, it's a completely different experience than if I can sit down and have a conversation.
Right. I think I might offer that. So when we joined the very first partner meeting I went to was in this building. And I found that meeting to be incredibly useful. And then I think it was about 6 months later, or maybe I'm fuzzy on time, but then we met at Penn State. And that face-to-face meeting actually reinforced a lot of what we were doing. And I really miss having that quarterly meeting, but it's not so much the quarterly meeting, it's all those face-to-face meetings. You can do a regional event, and that's great because then you see what's going on in the region, but you might miss out what's going on broader. So I'm not trying to advocate for more of these, you know, well, I guess in a way I am, but I think the FaceTime is definitely almost critical to keeping that sort of, you know, momentum going, you know, at an institution. The location of this was great because I was able to bring more people to this event than maybe previous ones. But even trying to branch out outside of the IT department, getting more involvement from everybody in the Yale Library. It's a struggle that I have, but I think I'm finally starting to reach that point of momentum where it's getting easier to start the Hydra conversation and get people involved. And if there was more of these events, I could easily see travel dollars being shifted more towards Hydra, given our investment.
I mean, as somebody from the other side of the pond, coming to these events is great, but it's a long trek, right? The more of these that happen, the less of them that you will be able to attend, I guess, as a presenter. And so there's always that fear of missing out. Which one will I pick? Which one will I go to? And so we've made efforts over the last 1 year with Richard and Chris about organizing European events as well. And I think we're probably getting growing to the size where, you know, the regionals are actually becoming very way more beneficial because you can go to more of those. And then stick with one sort of where everybody gets together once a year, I think it would probably be manageable. Where if there was one of these every 3 or 6 months, yeah, you can say it so much, even if it's free, but even if it's, you know, on Twitter and Slack every year, it's not quite the same in the group.
So I'm curious, you know, at these regional events, because we've heard this from multiple people about the value of these emerging regional events and the networking. Do you see added benefits that you get from that you don't get from like a big meeting? Could you share that?
I guess yes, because we get lots of Europe. Like, you know, if it's here, I would meet 4 or 5 Europeans because that's, you know, one institution will set one person kind of thing. Where if it's in London or if it's in, you know, Copenhagen or somewhere, it's easier to fly 4 or 5 people to those things. Therefore, it's you get more of the local people together. And you know, with all due respect, it's nice to be able to help people in your own time zone and so on. And also, I'm not going to send that Slack message, but I hope that it sticks there as time.
Yeah.
It's somewhere in the messaging system.
Yeah, it was some call yesterday. It was at 9:30 Pacific Coast time. It's like, wow. Maybe it was East Coast time, but for people on the West Coast, that would make it 6:30 in the morning.
Yeah, and that does make it very difficult, I guess, if we're trying to grow either in a sort of eastern direction into Europe, into Asia, or into you know, Australia, right? I mean, depending on a global scale, there's never enough time for everyone. So
we've just organized an Australia call, which is 9 o'clock in the morning and 10 o'clock every
week. Yeah. So that's my well, there's definitely a benefit, I think, to the regional level because then I can bring my entire team to something because it's only 100 euro each to get on the plane, where it's 600 or 700 euro to get on the plane. So therefore, I mean, one of the schools generally tend to go to. Or maybe it's just.
So, going away from the international regional, but to the southeast, I've already had conversations with many of the other people. In my position at UGA, and I know Alabama is interested potentially too, and being able to have those conversations and see them. You know, I will be having a meeting with the AOL at UGA next week. The captain is coming for a visit, and we're going to talk about some of these things.
We're good value.
Well, I mean, it's a little different. It's like,
to know, okay, I can get some kid here in under an hour and be able to have those conversations. And a lot of what he is interested in, I'm interested in. And because of where we are, I think that's part of it within the process. So those are things that we've been talking about, like, maybe this is useful for us to be able to have these conversations. And we're thinking about it, kind of also broadening it out, like, do we want to do a regional for but for library technology, just generally.
Also, it calls Virginia Tech is kind of 2 hours from UVA and 2 hours from Duke, I think, about that. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been wondering if that could be another spot.
Yeah, and I think the Southeast larger, right, is a great opportunity. But like Alabama is only 3 hours away from Atlanta, so that's, we could conceivably do a day where you can't really do a day event if it's impossible for us at least.
This is a little percolating idea.
Hi,
Ray. Like in the perfect spot where I came and could see you. One of the ideas I've been steaming on, I guess, a little bit in the last couple of days is it seems like the people that I interact with mostly at these connects seem to be dev opsy interested people. So we could potentially have summits on topic, right? Summits
right.
On approach, project service management, DevOps, etc. So we could potentially maybe get reformed that way to be able to have inter-year meetings potentially. The other thing I was thinking of is within the Hydra community, having, depending on exactly the state at which institution is engaging in Hydra, could potentially have a sponsorship where somebody within the community that's particularly knowledgeable at some particular topic is sponsored by the institution to come out for a week and just do workshops or available for questions or parent programming or something like that. I've been trying to think of this problem where we're starting to grow to the point at which, you know, Hydra Connect takes a lot of organizational abilities. I saw Richard put his head in his hands about having more than 1 year to do nothing but email for the rest of your life. So, right, how do we get some inventive about potentially smaller meetups that are more concentrated or have handfuls of people that are roving maybe a little bit throughout the year.
And I think that's part of the reason when UGA and I have the conversations, we just happen to be at the same point. So it just is a better communication point for us. Like, okay, what are you doing for buying?
Right.
Or not buying,
right,
in case maybe. So those conversations are really useful. Whereas I think later on down the line, having some other conversations, having developers go out to someplace like UVA or Duke or Tech would be much more useful.
Yeah.
I was thinking too, yesterday you mentioned like the US Embassy wanted to some links and along with what Aaron's talking about, we could find sponsors to bring people that are experts in different areas to locations to have a summit or something. Do you think that would help grow and like both these like regional meetings in your area potentially?
If a regional meeting was created in experts, who else in regional meetings near?
How do we get a regional meeting like ignited like in your area? Like, what can we do to like grow regional areas?
So bring some experts in.
Right. That's what I was going to say. I think that we had this experience before. I created the Digital Humanities Network in Mexico, which was basically one of our founding members is from Stanford, so he went to universities in Mexico one by one ask for meetings with certain people to see if they would be interested in joining that network. So I think that same model would work for Hydra. Actually go to a university, speak with them one-on-one, show them Hydra, the opportunities, collaboration, and what it offers beyond just software, to see if they might be interested in becoming part of this initiative. So from there, well, first that I think having a sort of virtual meeting to talk about these things and then going one by one to the other institutions that might be a bit more interested, and from there eventually create the regional meeting. I think that would work. Then see about getting partners. Well, you'd have to have a partner for the regional meetings. I think that would be the best strategy. And if anyone speaks Spanish, I'd be interested. That'd be great.
Just one, I mean, you know, value of face-to-face meetings is, you know, recognised, but I do think we could perhaps do a little bit more virtual stuff. It was interesting what Michael said about getting people to kind of come in and comment on and help define how to migrate. So I think potentially we could do more of that kind of thing. Get people who are kind of experts in particular areas to on a hangout to comment on plans or look at code reviews, pair programming. I think there's things we could do virtually, and the Virtual Connect, which I was involved in organising, was very much let's do some presentations, but I think maybe we could do some more conference style virtual connect type activity where you can actually get, you know, it's a little bit like working groups really, but get people together on specific topics.
I like that idea because I think, so I have a lot of programmers that participate on the different working group calls or the tech call, and they're all valuable, but if there was a call that was, here's what we're trying to solve, and at the end of that call we hope to have a deliverable or something, that would be very valuable.
Yeah.
I was coming back to the question you were saying about giving back to the community, the code, and overall, like, what it means to be a hybrid partner is like giving back to the community. Right? So, I know we have this situation also that we did some code development that we keep on thinking, yeah, we do have to give back, we have to give back, but that never comes. Keeps on going out. And if there are any of these institutions in the same boat, there might be something that we get done through these that would be like all kind of partners think about what they get to do for a month. Like a group effort so that nobody feels shy about giving back their code, because I know a lot of people feel like it's not up to the level of. I have been in that situation when I would put a pull request and actually have seen that some people say, oh, why is this not my bad? But at the same time, it's good that, you know, you just put it as work in progress rather than just doing something on the side. But I think it would be good if we can have some kind of a combined effort on that to see what everybody can.
I like that. It's sort of a wink of how our community model.
And I don't know if we have anything Thursday or Friday, but sometimes the last day of the event, people get together to just do like mini coding sessions on the actual code of creation concerns. And you have to work the game. I don't know if there's any tomorrow on the schedule for that or Friday. I have to look. Is there anything here that you can probably do?
No, those are pretty exhausting times. We also just had a developer meetup at Penn State that was very targeted. What are we trying to solve? And that has been very, very successful. But there was concern because it was set up that this was some more, I guess, experienced women than people, but how do we have sessions where it's like, okay, this is a summit for moving from beginning to, so like my toes in the water to like ready to go to this knees for that. So success is articulating that clear, what are we trying to accomplish, and really sticking to that very well. It takes a lot of preliminary work.
And what I'm suggesting is not you don't have to meet face to face for like a dev con. It's more like everyone looks at their things that they have done on their own. And then we put it out there that these are the things we have done. So I mean, these are the things we didn't have to do there. Because I can think of other two projects that one is based on Christian as my mom, Sophia. There are a few things that we have done that can be computer back. But we always keep on thinking. I mean, we are thinking actively. But it never comes
around. Well, the thing I really love about that is it's like if you were to link that effort and set that up, like the UI UX developer that I talked about,
right,
they could contribute back to accessibility,
yeah,
stuff that week. And that's something I can quickly identify that we could prioritize that week for them to get back.
Yeah, so I mean, I think that's one of the
How many of you participate on partner call? So I wonder, how many of you would participate on a partner call if you knew that it was, had a topic of interest to you? It's once a month.
Here's a question, why aren't you a burger?
Organizations to do work in this way, community driven open source, and why it's of good value. So I think that that's an essential kind of enrollment process for people that are working at my level and to make myself available to other people's administrations to come in and have that conversation. Because I know there's a number of us in the community that would be willing to do that.
I would be very happy to see it because sometimes. A lot of this community that's in this department's not doing a lot. Whereas it's money, but it's also like trying to sell the integration on more developers or making on all the work you're wanting to do for 2 weeks to this. And here's the benefit.
Mm-hmm.
Being able to like show that benefit is not a feature thing that sells more.
Do we have a age Project Hacker that exists that says, I'm not a partner, I haven't signed my CLA or CLA, how can I contribute? What do I get? And then, like, a tier as you go further into the process, you know, how can I contribute? I mean, there's obviously a lot of, like, that's still contributed, but just really helping point administrators to that.
We do have kind of a richer problem in this. I feel like we have been articulated in the, like, the path to becoming a partner and all the variety of ways that people can contribute.
Yeah, actually, I'm very proud of you. I did say the culture earlier, just talk more about that partnership. It doesn't talk about that all before we get to it.
Right.
Just that sort of
how do we move people along? And, you know, you would think of San Diego as they were heavy contributors and everything about partnership.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, we've seen a number of institutions that started out at the very grassroots, the software engineers or metadata analysts or someone, a service manager might get involved and see benefit to the community, and it kind of grew out of that. So that's good.
But I think it's not, what I'm hearing is not just a, if you are not yet a partner, how do you contribute, but if you are a partner, how do you get cycles allocated not just to your edge implementation, but to contribute back to the core? And we could probably articulate that better. I mean, the big one is the avoided maintenance. Like, if you don't contribute back, you've essentially forked. The next time you want to update, you're going to be, you pay now or you pay later. And if you're Diverge, Stanford is basically on a big hack and fork right now because we were very early and then we kind of didn't keep up with where Sophia and operation concerns are. It's going to be a couple of years to get back onto the main trunk.
I would say.
Dave, who sits beside you, was involved in our labor to it, but we were very much in the same place. And, you know, we actually took what, Dave, an alpha version of one of the Sophia releases and started working on that. And we knew that we were developing things that were in the feature wish list. But what we did was carve out time at the end of that first delivery phase to contribute back. But we don't talk about that kind of thing. I don't think. Like the different approaches that different institutions take with it.
What I was going to offer, I mean, I don't think fork is a strong enough word for how far Yale is from the Hydra core. So the way that I've kind of looked at it is our upgrade path is sort of to start fresh. And well, one of the things that I really tried to do is change the mindset of our administration for when we contribute to the community. That's research and development time. That's training time. That has nothing to do with what the programmers are doing locally. If we do benefit, that's awesome, but that's not the deliverable. The deliverable is that the programmers are trained up more on the platform, they're talking more with peers at other institutions, and that's really what we're looking at is the deliverable. And again, any benefit that Yale may get is, that's cool, but that wasn't what we were looking for going in.
So don't forget, yes, there's a cost in not contributing, but there is a cost in contributing. If we've solved problems that are our problems, not your problems. And if we contributed, we have to think about what the general case is, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, while it's meant to be supported by the standards, the hard stats are saying, well, you know, this spring we're prioritizing, you know, contributing back to the community rather than to bring more features.
So on that, I think that's like, you have solved your problem in general, but in general. So we were kind of in the same situation, but before we ask everyone, sometimes we assume it's not everyone's problem, but it might. So that situation happens also, like many institutions think that it's only theirs that they make a solution for that. And that comes to the point that should be one contributor, but you want to be able to
solve comes from where? We solved our problem, being hydrous, but not your problem or your player to say that, like, working on features in Sprint that are good because the question is simply there may be a version that you put into production, but you work with Sprint, a later version. And it's good because you're more involved and more developed, and at the same time, you know, what's your local version when you're running on the
go back and try to reconcile. There's a direct benefit as a developer if you're aware, because you can say, I want one of those versions that it was going to take, or I love what it's going to take to get back to speed. But again, part of what you that.
That's difficult. I mean, situation where you are. I mean, the administration doesn't buy into this. I mean, if they just adopt Hydra because it's free, not because they really believe in it, that's really awesome. I mean, I think people need to start on the point that this is really the best long term. And there was a cost to it. Okay, pay now, I'm just going to say, I'll pay later. But it shouldn't be about the money that you're saving. It's the long term product that you're investing in. And you have much more control over it than you would if you, well, right, you don't have more control, but if you buy a third party solution, then you have very little control over that. So it's probably good having medium. But that optimization of the river.
Thanks. Are there other things that people would like to either get the people in the room to respond to about issues that you found difficult about that community, or blockers and something that you wanted to do in the community, or things you want to share that we've tried that are different than what we've already discussed? Yes.
How about you?
My question was, we have been, Michigan has been Hydro partner for, I guess, a few years, and recently with Hydro. I wonder, how's it different, like, so partnership?
Sorry, I'm not sure, but I have to.
I didn't hear the question. Can you repeat it? I'm with
Robert. Basically, what's the difference between provision and partnership?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
The we found actually when we started with partnership, everyone who wanted to become a part, well, people had to be asked and pursued to be partners. And the ones that eventually said yes had been in there for a while, long enough to be testers to demonstrate real kind of commitment to the project. At a certain point, we also found there were some institutions that were eager to sign up because it seemed cool or beneficial, maybe at a political level. And because Hydra wasn't, that seemed deleterious to the project. So we did not want Pino as a partner in name only. Was not what the Hydra project was about. We decided strategically we'd rather have fewer partners that were more committed and more rather than more partners who were scantily committed. So what we found out is because different institutions, the technical or social investment might come at a different pace than their actual willingness and ability to sign the letters of agreement. We said you can sign whenever you want, and if you sign before you really put out a production Hydra head or before you really started to come and engage with the community, that's a provisional status. And it's supposed, theoretically, it's not supposed to last for more than a year, and theoretically, when people have put out a Hydra head, when they've contributed to meetings, when they're active participants in the community, that's when they should go from provisional to real status.
And I think the benefits of actually taking that approach ties back to what Julie had mentioned earlier, what she raised about the community, is that, you know, there's a lot of people that just sign up for the mailing list and are just lurking, but people are actually committed to the core purpose of the community and are contributing. I am involved in some other efforts where people just sign up on a list and they get occasional emails, and there's no real, as a result of that, there's no real discussion. I don't know. It feels like somewhat more empty to be part of those organizations. To me, than to be part of this one. Karen?
I'm curious. Could you have a show of hands if you were to do a partner?
So it's half, more than half.
How many people are on their way to
becoming
a partner?
More than that, come on.
Exactly.
every hand that on that last question was.
Well, there was one hand going like this, and I'm curious, you know, in those situations where you're not sure if you are or you're not, would you be willing to share what that is?
Yeah.
Like,
so I think ours is mostly because we are new. Like, we haven't started doing anything but talking about what our digital repository looks like. And we're really trying to be thoughtful about what solutions we choose because we have not got this. We've been burned in the past by trying to build something that is unrealistic. And we have ended up with, depending on what you talk about, 3 to 11 systems that do digital preservation, all of them doing their own thing, not talking to each other within the organization. So I think for us, it's more or less a communication, internal communication issue, and worrying about, okay, if we jump in too quickly, are we going to end up where we were before? And, you know, to be fair, there were lots of false starts. So I think that's what brought us back. I mean, I think we're closer and closer each month, but for us, that's really what it is. It's more of an internal issue than it is an external one.
For us, my institution had a very real need that was left by your film. And I'm just working as fast as I can to get a robust hyperbase solution in place to address that need. And I think there's, at least from my perspective, there's the desire to contribute that to the community, but being certainly jumping into quickly, which is put us in a position of not quite partner being only not giving enough back to be a valuable partner yet.
Yeah, I'd stress that the being a partner doesn't mean contributing code, right? I think the knowledge that you're gaining, working as hard as you are, how to install stuff, what are the questions to ask about, how do we get this into production? I want to continue I don't mean to hijack that, but I think that's something that we need to also elevate as a real contribution to the community. Even just asking the questions, what does it mean to spin this up, even in its current state, and have that in production totally untouched, totally untweaked, I think is a partner, really. Especially attending these, asking questions, you know, getting connections and trying to identify more places in which we can stand up the service quicker, faster, you know, have more production-ready things ready to go potentially have maybe better documentation around the implications of all on one machine versus distributed, like all that sort of stuff.
I was thinking the experience you have, and the question was yesterday, how could we make this easy to install and easy to configure with Hydra in the box? I would think every bit of your experience would stick to that, right?
Absolutely. And there is a breakdown.
The first started back in San Diego, I was really excited about this, is that quite a year to sort out equipment and audio partner. And here we are about 3.5 years later, and still haven't done it. And that's mostly down to European lawyers balking at American legalese. We finally got that sorted, and certain words were interpreted differently in different sets of the content. But I haven't felt any less part of the community over the last 3.5 years by not being a partner. I guess I missed the full multilocal in one sense. But other than that, we would be welcome to be part of events to contribute to fair knowledge and experience. Again, we haven't contributed, but I think we've full request, I think, over 4 years of working with the library. And so we have got the CLAs in place, but it hasn't really made any difference to us as to whether we actually are formally. It would be nice to be able to sort of say, you know, take a box somewhere and we'll get around to doing that in the next few weeks. But it hasn't really been a big deal not being a partner. We're still in the game.
Very similar, very interesting, you know, because we're, you know, we just needed to get some work done on Hydra because we knew that, you know, we couldn't just clean up a Hydra box and call it a day. We needed to contribute to the code, and it just made sense to do it collaboratively. And name, but from some sort of like that kind of official recognized US as part of the
Thanks to everyone who's joined us today. We're at the end of our time, and would you all join me in thanking our panelists?